No, no one's took your parental responsibility away. You have every legal right to know how your child's doing in school. If your child's about to go on in an operation or medical issue, you have every right to know that information. The difficulty is a lot of people bury their head in the sand, and that's where some of these problems can come about. Then there's the minefield that is the legal system. I say to a lot of people, either look at it from a logical perspective, like take out the emotion and read what's written, because then you will understand it more. Or if you was advising a friend, what would you tell that friend? What would you tell them to do? Because you're looking at it from someone else's eyes.
Welcome to Why Daddy Never Cries podcast with your host, Chuck Kelleher. At Why Daddy Never Cries, we'll explore the lives surrounding daddies, their children, divorce, and silent domestic violence. We'll hear real-life horror stories from unsung heroes fighting for the ability to stay in their children's lives. We'll get those voices heard and hopefully find solutions before you lunatics burn the whole place to the ground. Hang in there, daddies. Chuck's here.
Chuck Kelleher and Why Daddy Never Cries are providing this podcast as a public service. I've known Chuck for 45 years, and he's neither a lawyer nor a mental health professional. He's not a doctor nor a rogue scholar by any stretch of the imagination. Chuck is simply a guy who's lived in hell for 20 years. Once he found a way out, he drew a map to help others navigate their own way home. The views and opinions expressed by Why Daddy Never Cries, employees, or our guests are their own. Guest appearance on the program do not imply an endorsement of them, their opinions, or any entity they represent. And please, for the love of God, if you have any questions or fears about your unique circumstances, please contact a lawyer, a religious leader of your choice, or a medical professional in your area. Don't fuck this up, brothers, because we're all in this together.
We'd like to thank our sponsor, Voss G2, for helping small and medium-sized businesses elevate their brand perception with design. Take your brand to the next level at VossG2.com. We'd also like to thank Harry Duran and his team at Fullcast for their amazing assistance. If you're planning a podcast and you haven't contacted Fullcast, you might as well call your show Podfade.
They say there's no such thing as a good lawyer. Well, we're going to break that stereotype too. Claire Hobson's our guest today, the legal wing of the Falsely Accused Network UK. And guess what? She's going to help you guys for free. Today, she's discussing some of the errors we make when we're starting this horrific process of getting divorced. And if you've been falsely accused of domestic violence, guess what? Your court case just got a lot more complicated. All right, let's get into it.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to introduce Claire Hobson to the show. About how many cases do you see a week on average?
It varies. A lot of the time, some weeks can be filled with a lot of paperwork in preparation for a hearing. Like, for example, this week, I've got a two-day hearing with someone. And then, well, next week, I've got a hearing. I would say probably around at least 3 a month.
Oh, wow. Okay. And that's after they've been vetted by FAN?
Yeah, essentially. Like, when Mike kind of does the preliminary chat, and essentially, if he feels they need that further assistance to take to court for whatever reason, he will then pass them on to myself or other relevant people who can assist in that type of thing. I think, obviously, with myself, how me and Mike came to be was I assisted him in his case because there's a lot of trust, loyalty, and the aim is to always them come to me from the beginning.
Okay.
Essentially, they're getting my guidance right from the very start, because sometimes it can be difficult when someone's already had assistance, whether it's solicitor, barrister, counsel. I know in the US, it's kind of a blanket approach. It's a lawyer.
Yeah.
That's more of a generic term over here. So anyone can call themselves a lawyer. It makes it more difficult to kind of support people the way you'd like to. But yeah, I manage it. I don't generally have issues with it.
Then there's like three tiers of lawyer or barrister over there, correct?
Yes. We have a paralegal, which I am. My legal education allows me to call myself that. Or a lawyer. That's a more generic term. Anyone can essentially call themselves a lawyer. Then we've got a solicitor. And then we've got a barrister counsel, which in the US, that would be the lawyer status.
Can you guys practice throughout the whole country or is it local?
Yes. I know your laws differ from state to state, but over here, in England and Wales, the laws are the same.
Okay.
Whereas in Scotland, Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland, they differ. So for me, I couldn't go to Scotland and support someone.
Right.
I can only kind of focus on England and Wales.
Okay.
Because the laws differ.
That makes sense. Makes a lot of sense. And this is a good segue into our first segment. things that men do wrong when they're falsely accused or when they're served divorce papers is to not seek out legal counsel and try to do it on their own.
Yes. I wouldn't recommend anyone do it on their own. It's difficult because over here, you generally get 30 minutes free legal advice. There's various different ways where you can get free legal advice, but to be more specialised, you essentially have to pay for it.
Right.
But the difficulty is a lot of people bury their head in the sand, and that's where some of these problems can come about, because you've got to understand they are dealing with the emotional task of a breakdown, whether there's children involved, they've essentially lost the children.
Yeah.
Then there's the minefield that is the legal system. Then there's the finances. So it's kind of rationalising all of that and be able to come at it from a logical perspective. I say to a lot of people, either look at it from a logical perspective, like take out the emotion and read what's written, because then you will understand it more. Or if you was advising a friend, what would you tell that friend? What would you tell them to do? Because you're looking at it from someone else's eyes.
That's a great idea. What would you tell a friend in your situation? It kind of removes you from the situation.
Yes, definitely. When you look at it from someone else's perspective, you're on the outside looking in, so you do see it from a more logical point of view. And people don't kind of grasp it at the start. As the hearings or cases flow, they tend to kind of see the perspective on where I'm coming from with that point. It does help them.
How much could a person hurt themselves by showing up to an initial hearing without counsel? What have you seen where someone has gone to court without you and then brought you in and then you kind of had to clean up their mess?
Bear in mind, I have a point of view.
Okay.
Men see in black and white, so what they read is what they see. Women read between the lines.
Mm-hmm.
Women have the ability to see things emotionally. So when a man comes in and reads all of this information that they kind of believe isn't true or they say isn't true, then they'll come in with that black and white approach sometimes to defend themselves. There's very much a defense mechanism in men that obviously women don't necessarily have. But again, I always try to tell people, it's not your burden to defend yourself. It's on them to prove their case. So give the detail, but don't kind of take on the case like you have got to defend yourself from every single angle, because that's their responsibility.
And I can tell you, you feel like that, because when I was falsely accused, I felt like telling everybody, I'm innocent, and most people don't care or even want to hear it.
Yeah, that's another thing as well. It's obviously family law, it's private law, so it's hard to be able to go home to maybe your new partner, your mum, your uncle, your auntie, whoever, and be able to say, well, this happened today, because you can't, you're not allowed to talk about it.
Right.
So you're putting yourself in a box where you have to explode at some point, and that sometimes can come across in people's conduct. I will reassure people when I can kind of sense that they're starting to get agitated or frustrated, then I'll give them a gentle tap or I'll say, stop talking. You've made your point.
Right.
Like, enough's enough. That type of approach. Because again, you go too far down that line and the court's looking at you. They don't know you.
Right.
They don't know your everyday movement. So they don't know your everyday personality. This small window for an hour or 3 hours, 8 hours, they're judging you based on that small window.
Correct. Yeah, been there.
You kind of have to find the balance between showing your emotions and being your best self and sitting in the middle of both of them, because otherwise you could be told you're emotionless, which can be used against you. You're too emotional, which can be used against you. So I get the frustration and difficulty that people can have on their own. And especially when they've got no knowledge of the law, a lot of people can go into this very blind and with rose-tinted glasses in the hope that they will walk into this court, they will explain their side of the story to the judge, and all will be well. Not like that.
No.
These rules, these laws, there's a process that has to be followed.
I can definitely warn our listeners. I had that same approach. I felt the need to defend myself to everybody. I did get counsel because I realized I didn't know what I was into, and I didn't know if being falsely accused, I mean, domestic violence is a crime. So why wouldn't you go to jail for being accused? I didn't know that family court doesn't care about that, which is unusual how it doesn't just go straight to criminal court if you're committing a crime. I guess a big warning for people is nobody does know if you're innocent or guilty because they don't know you. And I remember my attorney, who I had spent thousands of dollars at this point and countless hours preparing. When we got to our first trial, she met my ex and said, oh, I'm sorry, it was a pre-trial meeting. And she said, that woman's not afraid of you. I said, yeah, I know. I told you that. She goes, yeah, but I don't know you. But now I know she's not afraid of you. I go, yeah. by judging people or coming at them hard because they're looking at you a certain way, which if you're abusing a person, you deserve to be looked at that way. You almost want to let people judge you, and then over time, they'll see that it's not true.
I completely understand where you're coming from with that point. Certain things can be said and people will react instinctively. So let them kind of react like that. Like, this is obviously from the perspective of the other side.
Right.
If they're acting like that, then they're showing the court what they're really like.
So they're smart enough to sit there and not say anything, and then you just don't see your kids.
Yeah. But being with people where they can fall into that tit for tat, it's like, no, just let them carry on. Come back to your point. Let the judge know you were interrupted. Things like that, because that person is showing what they're really like, and that's what the court needs to see.
And I like that, having counsel next to you, you can tap them on the hand or tap them on the leg. Okay, stop talking now. And you can also role play a little bit prior to going into the courtroom so they're not caught out of left field, not knowing what's going to happen. They get almost a taste of it.
Yes.
Now, are your family courts like ours, a small room, closed doors?
The closed doors, yes. All family matters are heard in private, unless it's public law, which is generally, obviously, children's services type of cases. But yeah, they don't publish names. But other than that, it's probably is the same as yours. Now, I know there are some cases in London that are reporting family law cases, but they've not crept up to where I am yet.
Okay.
So I don't know how that's going to pan out. Obviously, you're not allowed to repeat what's been said, especially on social media.
Perfect segue.
Yeah.
How much damage have you seen parents do to themselves with social media?
A lot.
I wish you could see your face, though, ladies and gentlemen.
A lot. But again, because it becomes that people want to tell people what they're going through. But again, people will get told off by such a person to say, you wrote this, that and the other on social media. Well, hold on a minute. How does that person know? How does that person know unless they've been watching your social media? Yeah, by all means, defend yourself from what you've wrote. You were wrong for doing that. That is made clear. But then think about, well, this person's scared of me. We've got an injunction or we don't speak, but how does she know what I'm writing on my social media?
Interesting. Now, I think smart counsel would say, I check your social media, not them. That'd be my first answer.
Well, counsel for the other side shouldn't be checking another party's social media.
Okay. I like that, though. You know, if you're that afraid of me, why are you following me?
Yeah, 100%. But again, the everyday person won't look at it from that perspective. They'll just kind of argue and defend themselves. I wasn't, this, that, and the other. Why are you arguing? Why are you defending yourself? Why is she looking at my social media if she's so scared of me? Or he, sorry.
Yeah, no, that's brilliant. And now you guys can't speak publicly. Mine was so long ago, I don't remember any kind of gag orders or anything like that. And social media was not a thing back then. Like, you can't tell your partner what happened in court?
No, we do have gagging orders over here. That is an order within its own right. But that's separate from the process of family law. Family law is private. You cannot discuss it in general. So this is what I was saying earlier. It's frustrating. You're kind of dealing with all of these emotions and you can't get on the phone to like your parents or your new partner or your best friend. And you can't explain to that person what you've just gone through because you can be held in contempt of court if you discuss your case.
God, I remember driving up 9th Avenue, just punching my steering wheel, calling my buddy, going, what the hell is going on? Because cell phones were new.
Yeah. Not to sound rude, was it? How long ago was you in court?
20 years, 15, 20 years.
Right. Oh, yes. So.
You know what wasn't new and what destroyed me? Emails and texts. We didn't realize how much of a Pavlov's dog we would be with emails and texts. And I would always get emails and texts on my time with the kids. And like, everybody got to read it now, instead of just putting the damn phone away while you're focusing on your children and then worry about the nonsense later because it's not going away.
Yeah.
I had dinner with my daughters last night. I think I was telling you, you know, I said, listen, I'm sorry. I didn't handle stress well when you guys were growing up. But that was one of the reasons I didn't get into it with them. I just, you know, apologized for not handling stress well. And we went on with our dinner. Yeah, I couldn't stop answering her. I was getting emails and texts like, you owe me money. I paid that money. When's the child support check coming? When I drop them off, like it comes every week. Stupid stuff like that. Like bills would come right before Christmas. A whole year's worth of bills would come, even though they're supposed to come immediately. So I get hit with $5,000 worth of bills and you have 30 days to pay. and they only came on daddy dinner nights and my every other weekend.
Again, even with child support, like, obviously, so I don't know if it's the same over here, like over there. So we, obviously, it's based on how much you earn. And so people will put the children in clubs, things like that. You're not obligated to pay for them clubs. If you want to put your children in, let's say, I'll put it like this. Let's say if dad wants to put the son or the daughter in football club. Mm-hmm. Well, the mother doesn't agree to that. Well, the mother's not obligated to pay for that because the dad put them in it. But then that works both ways. If mum puts them in the clubs, the dad's not obligated to pay for it because that's a decision the mum made. What you pay for your child support is for your child's needs, basic needs, food, electric. Now, I know it's always a sore subject, like with child support. It's a different process over there, maybe, from what it is over here.
It's 19.5% of your income for one child, 25 for two, 28 for three. Up to 36%.
I think ours is 12%. And it lowers. The more nights you have, the more it's lowered. Kind of as like a window. So I've not looked at it for a while. So say, for example, one night to 99, it'll be a certain amount. So then 100 nights to 149, it'll be a certain amount.
Yeah.
And then you kind of cross over into the shared care approach. But yeah, it's just 12%. And then again, it's a different calculation. So rather than if you've got two children, I don't think it's like 24%. I think it's like 20%, for example. So
right. It's
lowered.
One thing I told myself, and this definitely worked, was every weekend I didn't have my children, one of the things I did with child support was I told myself I was paying for a babysitter. And then I went out and enjoyed myself on the weekends. So I didn't feel like I was losing my children that weekend. You know, and sometimes it was stay at home. Sometimes, you know, I sat home and cried. But at the same time, I kept telling myself, don't think of it as dumping all this money. Think of it as you're paying for a school program. You're paying for child support. Now, when you have a person who you don't trust, you're always afraid that the kids are with them. But hopefully they grow up, that they make it past that stage. And like that, I don't know if you saw that Texas report, that mother who had the 3-year-old say goodbye to the father on Zoom and then shot him.
Yes. Yeah. I heard about that. It's...
Oh, God.
I can.
There but by the grace.
I can. It mind boggles me. That her decision wasn't about the child. It was about him.
It's about revenge. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the sooner you get away from that, the sooner you let it go, as you said.
If that was to happen to one of my clients, I would recommend they kind of make it known that the other party is intruding on their contact time. Because although, yes, the other party has the right to know that the children are safe, I mean, just for argument's sake, we'll say, depending on how long dad has got time with the children, mum does have the right to speak to the children and vice versa. But there's a line that can't be crossed where you're interfering with contact.
They would have hour plus conversations at night. And I'm like, you just left. I would obviously wouldn't say that to the kids because they were babies at the time, but you just left your mom. Why does she need to talk to you for an hour and a half on my whopping 2 days a month or 2 days every other week?
Yeah.
But that's a ploy. That's a ploy just to mess with your time.
Of course it is.
And it did. It took 3 court appearances before they actually saw the pattern. It was just literally every time something good happened within 2 or 3 days a week, I was served.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, that tells me it's more a way to disrupt your happiness at that time. And almost like she's saying, I'm still here. I've not gone away.
It was more like, you're still here. If you go away, I'll leave you alone.
Yeah.
I was a non-existent father. I've had that conversation with my girls. They're like, you, mom never talked bad about you. In fact, we didn't bring you up at all. And I was like, well, that's actually part of the problem.
But that in itself, that's psychological harm. Because a child, they should have the emotional ability to be able to say, come home and say, we did this with dad. And that works both ways. They should be able to go to either parent and say, we did this with this parent. We did that. We went here. So in itself, by not giving that emotional permission to speak about the other parent, you're kind of implanting into that child that we can't talk about that parent. We're not allowed. We'll get in trouble. That can be argued as psychological harm.
Yeah, saw the damage. You know, little things you'll notice. My lovely daughters, if you're listening to this, it's okay. But they would go away on school trips and not come back with gifts for dad. You know, and they would slip like, oh, I got mommy this trinket. I got my sister this trinket. And I'd be like, oh, that's nice.
That's the sad thing, isn't it? It's like, we as adults can learn to filter our emotions. We channel it out, but children are innocent.
Absolutely.
They are innocent and they don't understand. How does a six-year-old understand that they can no longer see daddy or mummy, you know, and depending on the circumstances? And then I can't even go to this parent and ask why, because I'll get in trouble.
Somebody was saying that their mother used to make them clean the toilet if they ever mentioned the other parent's name.
It's shocking.
But I was like, oh my goodness.
But I'm a great believer. I say to people all the time, trust, have faith in your children because they will come to you one day.
And you know what? I can honestly tell you that is true. We're in a number of different support groups. I mean, you're the legal wing of FAN. So many guys ask me how I'm so positive, how I am able to look at this from a brighter perspective. Now, again, 15 years going through this, a lot of time has passed and I made a lot of mistakes, but you always try to make small mistakes and then you try to recover and just keep moving on. That's the only thing you really can do. You know, having dinner with my girls last night was great. You know, at one point, I never thought I'd see him again. And now we talk, we text, we call every now and then.
And again, it comes back to that. I don't know how old they are, but they would have wanted answers, whether them conversations have been had or not yet. They need to know for themselves what you're like as a person.
Yeah.
As adults, a lot of us, we want closure on situations. So when there's that open end, people struggle to grasp and understand things.
Speaking of the need for closure, another great segue. Contacting your ex once you're being falsely accused.
Oh.
Don't do it, but you want answers. And I get that. You want to know, why'd you do this to me? We were in love. What the hell happened?
No.
How much does that screw a person up?
Definitely, because I think more so when, say, paperwork's been filed for an injunction, instinctively people go, what's this? What's all this about? And again, it's hard. People spend 10, 15 years with these people. It's an adjustment. A whole life has gone from that to this. People struggle to kind of adjust, which I completely understand, but you've got this paperwork. Any kind of approach is finished.
Yeah.
Because that paperwork shows that they don't want to communicate with you. They don't want to be amicable with you.
Absolutely. My lawyer had told me, if you're in a car accident, before she had actually met my ex, she said, if you're in a car accident, I want you to call me and tell me to tell your kids goodbye and not to call her before you die. Because if you live, they'll arrest you.
Yeah. But isn't it sad that if you're in that life or death situation, the first thing you want to do is speak to your kids and then you're frightened of being arrested if everything went okay?
Or even if you're in a long-term relationship, ignoring or delaying a response, you get served and a lot of guys sticking their head in the sand and not responding.
Definitely not. Like, do not ignore the paperwork. Do not underestimate the severity, the power held in that paperwork, because if you do, you might have a lot of restrictions placed on you that had you have took the time out to really think about what's being said and defend yourself, it might be a different story. I'd never recommend anyone bury their head in the sand. Again, this is the stepping stone for the wave that you're about to ride. You need to come at this strong from the very start.
That's good. What would you recommend somebody do the moment they're served? I guess there's really nothing. You just walk away, the server walks away, and you're standing there wondering what the hell just happened.
Well, yeah. I mean, in that sense, like, you've got some strange bailiff, like process server, knocking on your door to give you this paperwork. We're humans. People react differently. People react instinctively. So they read all this information and think, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Again, if I can teach anyone anything from this, look at what you're being served and then put it to one side. If you know you're not going to take in what's being said right there and then, put it to one side. Come back to it in 2 hours' time and then sit down and read it and look at it. I tell people all the time, always read it from a logical perspective, because then you can respond in a logical perspective. And that helps you to be able to read between the lines of what's being said.
It's interesting. One of the, you know, male-female jokes of the time, or, you know, men think logically and women think emotionally, but not really, actually, because you're right. We get very emotional with this and we can't think logically when this is happening. You know, I pay child support over $500 a week, plus 50% of everything. How the hell did I end up with that?
I mean, in that sense, your system like that slightly differs from ours. So in your divorce cases, I don't know if you're like child maintenance flows into the divorce side of things or whether it's separate. It's an interesting point that you've been married 3 years and you're paying all that out. Now, over here, there's this kind of case law that sets out that any marriage over 6 years is classed as long term. So then they go with the 50-50 approach.
Okay.
So anything under 6 years, they kind of look at it more from the perspective of who put what into this marriage.
We do the same here too. That she didn't work. I was the only one who worked. Therefore, I was the primary support and she was primary caregiver. So she automatically got the children. I automatically got the bills.
Right. It's, yeah, dare I say it, gender bias.
Yeah. And, you know, you try to do the right thing where you give someone the time to be home with the children. If you can afford it, and not everybody can, but if you can swing it to have a parent home with your child all day, as opposed to putting them in a daycare, which is probably costing you one of the salaries anyway.
Yeah. I mean, it's each to their own in that sense. I always think whatever kind of situation works for that person, it's finding that balance within the relationship to see what works for you. If it means staying at home, whether it's mum or dad.
Right.
It's irrelevant. So if the dad was the stay-at-home parent and then mum was the high earner, I always wonder if the same approach would be taken if that was the case, rather than the mum being the stay-at-home parent and then putting her life on hold so that dad could pursue a career.
Right.
Well, essentially, when the decision's made for dad to stay at home, isn't it the same argument?
That's interesting. Isolationism, to isolate yourself. That was the biggest mistake I made, locked up in a Brooklyn basement with a bottle of vodka. A lot of guys do that because of the shame.
What, have you got to be ashamed of? They've done nothing wrong.
That's true, but I know I felt guilty till proven innocent.
I can't speak for every individual, but you've just got to keep telling yourself, I've done nothing wrong. I have done nothing wrong. They've got nothing to be ashamed of. And again, when we're in them kind of situations, I say, just be yourself, just answer honestly, just be as thorough as you can when you're being asked to, because if you've not done anything wrong, what have you got to be ashamed of?
Valid point.
And I agree, people do find it difficult because there's a lot of self-blame. If I'd have done this different, if I'd have done that different. But again, do you think that other person sat at home blaming themselves for the breakdown?
Not at all. They still don't. They still don't.
So a key one, a big one that I sometimes tell people, like they'll say, she wasn't like this, or he wasn't like this. And at the start, no, they were always like that.
Mm.
You just didn't see it. There was a trigger point or something that happened that made that person start to show their true colours. They were always like that. They were just good at hiding it.
You ain't kidding. Do you see anybody trying to hide assets?
Yeah, all the time.
Not recommended?
No, definitely not.
What have you seen happen to someone caught hiding assets, other than their credibility is now destroyed?
Property. They've tried to argue property's not theirs. They've tried to argue that a property is theirs and it shouldn't form part of the assets.
Ooh.
Pensions are usually one that likes to get hidden. Other accounts is the favourite. When there's evidence of another account, people are very reluctant to show, say, for example, the last 12 months of the account, because the chances are there's something being hidden in that other account.
Right. They put a lot of money in or took a lot of money out?
Yeah. People, I mean, I maybe shouldn't be saying this because this might give people foresight, but you don't think, how many times do we transfer things like to whoever? So we automatically transfer money. Even like when you've got a savings account, you might transfer, obviously we're in pounds, you're in dollars. So you might transfer 20 into this particular savings account. If you're going through a divorce, you can guarantee that will be questioned.
Hmm.
Where's the evidence of that account that you're sending that 20 into?
So it's funny, we do a financial disclosure form. I found that humorous because there's no other industry where I have to tell you everything I own before you take me as your client. And at the end of the day, at least around here, the attorneys get most of it and nothing goes to the family, especially if it's a contentious relationship and you just want to keep fighting, which is asinine. But if you have one person who just will keep fighting and fighting and fighting, you're going to lose it all.
The benefit of our process, it's a lot of paperwork first.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have a hearing to set out any outstanding issues. Then there might be another hearing to kind of say, right, well, this, that and the other's been done. And then there's what's called, it's essentially a financial dispute resolution appointment. It's like a cards on the round table approach. Are you willing to do this? Are you willing to do that? No, yeah, I'm willing to agree to this. The approach is to try and narrow the issues on what assets are being sought. And then if that doesn't kind of go well, it then becomes maybe a free-for-all is the wrong term of phrase, but basically, like, say, you might only be seeking the pension. If things aren't agreed and this, that, and the other, you can essentially say, right, well, actually, I'm seeking this, that, and the other.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Guys who've made mistakes in court, we preach box breathing here and all different types of relaxation techniques. How do you work with your clients to take the emotion out of responding?
I mean, I always say, don't like to mummy them. I'll hold the hands, but there's only so far I can hold their hand too.
Sure.
And again, it's about honesty. So if they're a bit worried of what they might say, just find that balance and just be honest.
Keep it simple.
Yeah, because a lot of the times people get worried because they don't know the law, and we'll play to that naivety, because if you don't understand something, ask. Then it will be clarified, and dare I say it's simplified, because then if you don't understand something, how can you defend yourself? How can you work your case if you don't understand?
Makes sense.
I mean, you wouldn't tell a joiner to go and do a plumber's job.
Right.
So if you can't understand what you're dealing with, you need to ask those questions, because then you will be supported to kind of understand it. In my case, I'm not afraid to tell people, right, listen, stop. You need to think. This is the case. You carry on like that and you're not going to look very well. Because that firm approach needs to be taken at times, because some people need to be reined in.
Tough love type.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Do you think going through the divorce process, and I'm just spitballing here, is kind of like someone trying to give up alcohol? You can only do it when you're ready to do it and go through the process. But if you're not going to follow the program, it's not going to turn out well for you?
No, I don't necessarily agree with that.
Okay.
Because over here, you have your process of divorce. You have to go for a conditional order. Then you have to apply for a decree nisi. And then you have your decree absolute. Now, sometimes people will go for the financial in the midst of the divorce.
Right.
Others will wait. Now, each to their own. My advice is always saying, get that decree absolute. Get the decree absolute. Because once you have that decree absolute, any scope that that person might have to claim on your assets is ended from that decree absolute. So the best way to put it, and I say this to people all the time, if you're married to someone, whether you're separated, going through the divorce process, if you were to win the lottery tomorrow, that lottery money could form part of the divorce asset. If you have your decree absolute, then win the lottery, that's yours.
Absolutely. Because I'm starting to remember, we did that. We consolidated. So family court handles child custody and alimony, maintenance, child support, and divorce is handled by Supreme Court. And my lawyer merged the two. Supreme Court took both. So we did it all at once. And that was the first thing I remember ironing out, is from this date on, any assets she had were hers, any assets I have were mine. And then we just focused on everything from that date back.
Yeah, that's a good way of doing it, actually.
Still haven't won the lotto, but...
What you tend to find over here, these situations where husband will have his own house before he met the wife, and vice versa, wife had her own house before she met the husband. They then rent them out, or they let someone stay in them, and then they have their own marital home. Mm-hmm. Each has got a house, so you're on equal footing as far as the housing situations go. So then it becomes the marital home then is the home that becomes up for grabs.
Okay.
Again, it puts you on that level playing field. In my opinion, it's not justified or fair that one person gets two properties and the other one walks away with very little.
Right. Or nothing at all.
Yeah.
How long does it take on average for, and I'll say father for just the gentleman I know over there and all our friends at Falsely Accused Network UK, to actually get their day in court to see their kids? It seems the process is long.
I will say it depends on the circumstances.
Okay.
I've had clients where, because of the current circumstances, we've had a hearing in 48 hours. I've had clients where it's felt it should be urgent, but then the court haven't seen it like that and it's gone through the normal process. I mean, on average, I would have typically said it can take anywhere between 6 to 12 weeks for your first hearing.
Yikes.
However, given how the courts are overwhelmed at the minute, things that could be dealt with sooner aren't being, because of how overwhelmed some courts are. Not all courts are like that. Some courts you'll still get a hearing in 6 weeks, but then a court 20 minutes away, you might be waiting 6 months.
And you can't see or contact your kids for that whole time period. That's insane.
If there's no order restricting that, then technically nothing's stopping you from doing it. However, beyond the other parent.
It depends on the situation.
Yeah. Again, we have parental responsibility. A lot of people get confused with that, how that works. They think because they can't see the child, they're not allowed to contact the school, or they can't find out the medical reasons. No, no one's took your parental responsibility away. You have every legal right to know how your child's doing in school. If your child's about to go on in an operation or medical issue, you have every right to know that information. No one has took your parental rights away. And to do so is an infringement of your parental rights.
I had to drive that point home a lot over the last 15 years.
Yeah.
In fact, we've seen a few people on Falsely Accused Network say that they're having problems getting in touch with schools.
Yeah.
Schools aren't responding to them. I've seen it in the US and I've seen it in the UK now. What do you recommend somebody does when that happens?
Use the law.
Okay.
Use the law against them. I tend to kind of give people a template that they can use. 7 times out of 10 it works because they realise we're stepping on thin ice here by doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Then you'll have some schools where it'll be, well, I need to seek guidance. And then you don't get an answer for 2 months.
Right.
But again, the law is the law. They have to treat you the same as the mother. You have parental responsibility. So even when there's an injunction in place, a lot of people try to bar the other parent from school. And no, because that could be an infringement of your parental rights.
I agree.
The normal process for the situations like that is when there's an injunction is they'll try to find a window between 9 and 3, you know, that a parent can make an appointment with the school to go and have like a parent's evening or like to find out how the child's doing in school, because then you won't be breaching the order by doing so.
Okay, that makes sense. So you do it outside when you know your ex will be there. You definitely don't show up when your ex is going to be there for no reason.
Yeah.
School events, depending on what the order says, if it's a stay away.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys have orders where you have to stay out of a whole town.
Yeah, I know. So that rule has changed recently.
Oh, good.
If you want a boundary restriction, the rules are now are you have to put every street name you want that person barring from. And you essentially have to justify why you want them barring from that street 5 miles away.
That's good.
A good argument. I know the US have like freeways and your roads are quite wide. So it might be that you go down a particular route that you have to get to for work. Now, if that was part of, for example, a 100-meter zonal restriction, you would be in breach of that order.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people tend to look and go, well, actually, if I do that, that impacts my ability to get to work. That adds an hour onto my journey for work. The courts will try and deviate from kind of imposing too much of a restriction on people because they don't want to impact their ability to work. As weird as that sounds, they've got to kind of factor in people's day-to-day lives. So someone's mum, someone's elderly or ill auntie might live on a certain road and this person might be a carer for that person. If that's made known to the courts will take that into account because then that other person that they care for is impacted by this decision.
I'm glad they're doing that now.
But again, people need to kind of be aware of these types of things because if they just go into court and accept it, we'll walk out, well, they're screwed in a nutshell because they can't go back and argue that point.
Yeah.
And again, I tell people all the time, never walk out of a hearing feeling like things have been left unsaid.
And it definitely bites you in the ass as time comes on. My kids never really got down, I think, twice to my parents' house out of state because I had to always ask for permission. My lawyer explained to me that the best divorce tips are the ones that are kept in a drawer after the hearing and then the parents just figure it out.
Yeah.
I lived by that damn stip, that 76 effing page stip with every holiday, every birthday, everywhere I'm picking up, at what time I'm picking up, at what time I'm dropping off. Don't be 5 minutes late to the drop off. Otherwise, you know, a letter goes to the court. Now, they never came after me for stuff like that because, well, I was diligent about being on time. But the process can get so frustrating if you don't handle it in the beginning.
Yeah.
And I had Park Avenue attorneys and still things fell through the cracks that I've paid for now for the last 15 years. Like, why am I paying 50% of everything? Or how come she can buy 3 pairs of shoes, return 2, and I'm still paying 50% of everything?
Well, yeah. And that's the thing. If you come at it strong, not in an arrogant sense, but if you come at it from a strong point of view from the start, then you could put that person on the back foot of your perspective. Again, it's finding a balance. Don't play all your cards at once, but don't be afraid to defend yourself.
Right. Don't just sit there and take it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, here, like my wedding. I got remarried. We were to leave the tri-state area. We had to get a letter from the other parent saying the child was allowed to leave that, where they were going and for how long. Because my ex had taken my children to Canada and didn't come back. So that was one of our steps. Neither of us could leave New York, New Jersey, or Connecticut with the children without informing the other one. We could do whatever we want on our own time.
Right. It's slightly different here. So any parent with parental responsibility can take the child away up to 28 days without the other parent's permission.
That's crazy.
Then there is a kind of general rule that out of courtesy, both parents will say, right, well, I'm going here. This is my travel dates. I'm staying there. I will return them dates. And that kind of works both ways. There's usually like a rule where you can say 6 weeks notice, minimum 6 weeks notice. You can give 2 years notice if you want, but the latest notice you can give, for example, is 6 weeks, 28 days, because then it gives that window that if the other parent does object for whatever reason, you can then take it to court and say...
Actually do something about it.
Yeah.
So my wedding, I didn't get the permission to travel letter till the Friday before my wedding, to which I told our mediator at the time, we had already gone through court and we still had to have a mediator every week because we couldn't even follow the damn divorce step. And we is not we. And I told him, I said, listen, I'm not driving to Manhattan. I don't live in Manhattan. It's a Friday afternoon in the summer. Traffic is going to be ridiculous. It's going to take me 4 hours to get there and back. You've got the letter. I'm taking my kids out of state. And if they want, they can come fucking arrest me. To which my wife now is like, oh my God, you know, and it just put that stress on our relationship. Like, are we going to get arrested going to Massachusetts? And he assured me we'd be okay and they could call and she's not going to do anything. But I was ready to just say, fuck it. Here I am 3 days away from my wedding, still asking. And it's not like I got engaged overnight. It wasn't a shotgun wedding. We had probably a year engagement. It wasn't new.
But again, it's like, does it ever get tiring? What?
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I hear it so many times, even when all the court stuff is done and dusted. Such a body's doing that. How do we deal with that? It shouldn't be. This is your life now. This is what she's going to, or he's going to do to try and break you.
Mm-hmm.
Because you kind of went against the grain.
I stayed.
Yeah. So if, like you said earlier, the whole phoning constantly, so long as that the other parent knows them children are all right, unless it's stipulated in the order that that other parent has to speak to them, well, why are you dragging yourselves into that rabbit hole?
Yeah.
Does that work the same way the other way around? When the other when the children are with the other parent, do they get to ring constantly, like interfering with their time? No. So why are you allowing it? And this is where it's finding that balance for the tit for tat. Sometimes you've got to sever that control. So long as you've got that happy medium in your mind, don't get drawn into the other side. They're not going to change. You let them deal with that. That's their issue.
That is a great segue, because people go for the revenge. And I can tell you, I have an accountability call on Wednesdays where I talk with a friend of mine and we just make sure we're positioning ourselves for success for the next week. And we were talking today about that exact thing. And jokingly, we were talking about, you know, revenge and how people go from positive to negative. I get a lot of compliments for being positive, which took a long time to get to. And I was telling my friend this morning that someday over a beer, because I'm not going to say it over a phone, I'll tell him about the fantasies I had. And I'm a writer. They were gruesome. And boy, they were detailed, but can't go through with that stuff. Well, we know why guys go for the revenge factor, but how do we talk guys out of forgetting it? You're never going to get the satisfaction of them going to jail. You're never going to get the satisfaction of them coming back to you and going, hey, listen, I'm sorry. You know what? I got bad advice from my mom and I shouldn't have done that to you. That's never going to happen, people.
I think you've got to let it go. I was having this conversation today. I can't fathom why people want to be so negative. It mind boggles me personally. Like, I will always try and find a positive in a negative situation. And I'm speaking from experience. I work in this kind of process and I had to go through this process with my son.
Mm-hmm.
But my ex, it's like, is entrenched in negativity. And I remember saying, like, I don't want to be that person. I don't want to be full of hate.
Yeah.
I'm not going to change him, and I can't change him. He's not going to change. If he can't change for his children, then who's going to change for? Let it go. I'm living my life. I'm happy. I'm working. I go on holiday, enjoy my time with my kids. It's not me that's going to regret my decision in 10 years' time.
Yeah, I agree.
So you've got to look at it from that perspective. Either you're going to allow yourself to be in that rabbit hole of that negativity, or you've got to say, you know what? I'm away from that drama. I spend time with my kids. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. Let it go. And I totally get, I've been in that situation. It's difficult, but you've got to kind of ask yourself one day, is this who I want to be?
Yeah.
It wasn't who I was before, so why do I want to be that person now?
Well, I definitely grew from it. And my daughter said that they can tell I'm a nicer guy now, and they think I probably was a real scumbag back then. And I kind of let them know it doesn't really work like that. But I have definitely improved over the years, because why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
And I have two other children, younger children now. We've joked around a little bit about how they have the better dad. And I was like, well, you all have the better dad, because I've done nothing but try to improve myself, which I was going to do anyway. It's not like I was bad and then decided I'm going to be good. No, you always should try self-improvement, because that's kind of what life's about.
Yeah. And I think it's accountability as well. And not in the sense where I accept I did something wrong, I've got to do this. It's accountability to say, right, this is my situation. What do I do about it now? I get upset, have my moment, talk to my friends, talk to a therapist, talk to whoever you want to help you get over that. Because again, you put yourself in a negative mind frame if you are constantly wanting to be in, dare I say it, that victim mode.
Yeah.
It's not a healthy way to live.
And then your daughters see you as a ball of stress, as my kids definitely saw me. And the sooner you get away from that, the sooner you let it go, as you said, the better everybody is. And the better you are. I mean, I'm remarried.
Yeah.
You know, I have four kids. I don't have two kids, but I get to see my two kids every day. I kiss them in the morning. I never got the opportunity to do that. Kiss the kids before I go to work. I do that every day now. You know, if you stay positive, you can have positive experiences. If you're staying negative, no one else is going to want to be with you either. So you're not going to be able to build a life.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people seem to think they'll be happier with someone else. No, it's about loving yourself, as cheesy as that might sound. You have to love yourself.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying go out and buy a flash car or motorbike or buy the most expensive pair of shoes out there. You've got to learn to love yourself, because how can you give that love if you don't know how to love yourself?
Yeah, I agree. Mike and I started around the same time, and Mike was my first interview. I don't even remember how we got in touch with each other. A guy in the UK and a guy in New York. The men we've met over this past year, I mean, it's not slowing down. It's not stopping. I do like the fact word's getting out. You have movies coming out. Like, my guest last week is releasing a movie, The Stranger I Love, about parent alienation. It's coming out in the UK.
Oh.
I'll send you where it's being premiered.
Right.
There's a Netflix special. A buddy of mine just called up, my cousin actually, and said, you got to look up Dead or Alive, episode 2, which has a mother take the child away and disappear, and they finally get the child back to the father. You never heard about stuff like that. Even when my ex took the children to Canada, you know, I was talking to the police. I'm like, what if I took the kids to Canada? Like, oh, we'd send the wolves out after you. I'm like, then how come you didn't go after her? Like, because she's the mother. Again, that was 15 years ago, 20 years ago, whatever it was.
Now, we're in 2024. I'd like to think now that things like that happen, they are more on the ball. But sadly, it doesn't always work out like that.
Especially in the smaller towns.
I mean, one thing I will say about the US, what I think is absolutely fantastic, is the Amber Alert. So I've been to Orlando a few times, and we've been on holiday there, and we've got an Amber Alert, and it's like 5 minutes ago or 10 minutes ago, this child was kidnapped. We don't have nothing like that. So if a parent had custody of a child that the other person shouldn't see, and then that child was taken for whatever reason, it's a bit more of a drawn out process.
Right.
Yeah, the police will act as quickly as they can. But if that was the UK and we had that kind of process, how things would be different, because it does happen. Obviously, people leave the country with the children. There's these international abduction charities.
Yeah.
If it didn't happen, then they won't be around. Again, that's a case of acting quickly.
My ex-wife legally left with the children to Canada. So that was another thing that was hard to get them back, because, like, well, you let her go. Well, she was supposed to be back in 2 weeks. Now it's 8 months.
See, again, if that was over here, let's say, for example, someone's ex-wife said, right, I'm taking the children to France for 2 weeks. I'll be back on such a day. And then it ended up being 3 or 4 weeks. Then the other person could take it to court for a Hague Convention application and order the immediate return of the children.
But that's only after they've been divorced, right? If they're still married.
No. Say, for example, if they're separated, and because if they're still married, then it would be a bit of an odd situation anyway. Why is your wife gone away for 4 weeks without you?
Visiting her mother.
But yeah, no.
While I work.
Let's talk about, like, a couple that weren't married, separated.
Okay.
One parent said, right, I'm going away for 2 weeks. I'll be back on such a date. And then it came to light that, hang on a minute, she's not returned or he's not returned. Then that would warrant an urgent Hague application.
Okay. 10 years you've been practicing. How long have you been helping men? Because I tell you, going back to the Mike story earlier, you were the first name I heard as somebody who was helping people over there. And it's an honor to meet you because you've helped a lot of guys. I've watched the chat groups. I've heard guys come back even before you were part of FAN and say in the Falsely Accused Network, for anyone who doesn't know what FAN is, they'd always talk about Claire. Got to get in touch with Claire Hobson. Got to get in touch with Claire.
It does not make me laugh as in a hi, kind of like people will contact me and go, oh, such a body, so much to get in touch with you. I'm like, all right. Okay, fair enough. What's your problem? I mean, just by way of example, I had someone contact me from London. Now, to give you a perspective,
okay,
like a 3-hour drive away from London in Manchester. So someone rang me and said, my Uber driver told me to get in touch with you because you helped him. Where are you? He went, London. Uber driver? What? I don't know any Uber drivers in London. Eventually, he said, oh, it was this person. I was like,
yeah,
right, that makes sense now. So it was someone that I did assist, but for paperwork. I've done this 10 years, I think. What? I'm not someone where I'm like, I'm amazed. I'm not like that. I just, all I do is I put the best energy that I can give people into their case. I don't promise them the world because I can't give them that.
No, that's true.
But I can promise them I will do my best to fight their corner with them. So long as obviously they're honest with me, I can do what I need to do to help them win their case.
What should someone look for in, and I'll just use lawyer or attorney, especially someone who's been accused of false allegations. If you have money, at least over here, you can get any lawyer you want.
Yeah, same principle.
Doesn't mean they're going to help you, though.
I mean, if you're an everyday person, you're kind of earning the minimum wage type of salary, then there is support out there. You can find a McKenzie friend. You can find paralegals, or there is support out there. You've just got to look for it.
Mm-hmm.
And even that, like, I'm a McKenzie friend, like paralegal. So for argument's sake, we'll use the McKenzie friend term. Always do your research. You don't know these people from Adam. So if they're saying to you, oh, I want this, that, and the other amount, well, what do other people say about them? Do other people recommend them?
It's where social media is awesome. Yeah, because now we can find these things out.
Yeah. Your friend so many months ago was in court. How did they do it? Oh, well, they hired this McKenzie friend. Well, all right, what's the name? Things like that. I mean, again, I like to think one of my selling points is word of mouth.
Yeah.
Because people speak the truth if they think you've helped them. Because there's a lot of trust involved in this. This strange, you're asking, you're a stranger to them, and they're asking you to help them with one of the most important things in their life.
Yeah.
So when the best friend or their auntie or the cousin has told them, well, this person helped me, that speaks a lot more than going to a website, typing in a name, and that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
I do like to think that there is enough people that I can say, well, if you speak to this person, they'll let you know how they feel. You don't even have to tell me what they said to you. If you want the feedback from how I support, how I help people, speak to that person or speak to that person.
Claire, where can people find you? We have the Falsely Accused Network UK, which is in our show notes at all times. What else?
I have my own website, familylawparalegal.co.uk. There is a contact us button. Then I'm also part of the McKenzie Friend organisation. By area, I would be in the Northwest. It's like a map on the McKenzie Friend organisation website where they can just kind of click the dot and see who's on that. Social media, I've got a Facebook page, could say Family Law Paralegal. Email is inquiries@familylawparalegal.co.uk.
Nice.
There's various ways that people can get in touch with me if they want to.
I want to thank Claire Hobson for being on the show today. Claire, you know what? It really is an honor to meet you because anybody who's out there putting their neck on the line or helping people in these situations and haven't been there, you're just so lost.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming.
It's been a pleasure.
I tell you, we need more attorneys like Claire Hobson. On today's show, she helped us understand that discussing our cases publicly can and will bite us in the ass. If you've been given an order by a court to stay away from your ex, not to contact your ex, guess what? Don't do it. And as painful as it is, if you can't contact your kids, use the legal process. But you gotta wait. Isolation. Don't shut yourself off. There are support groups out there. Now, the good news is you don't have to leave your house to get to any of them. There's people online. There's people out there who you can talk. Get in touch with the Falsely Accused Network UK. There's Armor for Men, Falsely Accused Network US, Falsely Accused Network Canada. You have veteran fathers in the US and the International Family Alliance in Canada. There are self-help groups out there all over the place. Don't isolate yourself. And I think the main takeaway from today's show is you have to realize to get over it. If you're looking for vengeance, revenge, vindication, you're not going to get it, and that's okay. because you don't need it. What you need is to look your children in the eyes and tell them, I did my best to be with you, and I'm going to continue to be my best for you. Don't ignore these court dates, guys. Show up, because I tell you what, you miss a court date, you might lose more than just 8 hours of your life. You might end up losing your kids, paying ridiculous amounts of money, all because you weren't there to say, I can't do that, or I want to do that. I want to be with my kids. I'd love to say don't hide assets, but yeah, just try not to do it. It's hard, man. If you're not giving it up in court, your attorneys are taking it. Don't worry about money. Worry about moments. At the end of the day, you can't take money with you, but you can take memories. All right, Joe, take us home.
We must get our voices out there. Send us your stories to whydaddynevercries@gmail.com or whydaddynevercries on Facebook. Remember, this is a daily and sometimes hourly struggle. So follow us on Daddy Never Cries at Twitter and whydaddynevercries on Instagram, and let your voice be heard. Let's end the fatherless children syndrome that's plaguing this world.
The team of Why Daddy Never Cries consists of Joe, the voice of reason, Nicole Kelleher, and Scott Hall. Thanks, everybody. You can't change what happened to you, brothers. What you can control, however, is how you react to every situation. So you gotta figure out how to make it work for you. And when life gave me lemons, I said the hell with the glass. I'm making an international lemonade franchise. So until next time, you've got this, Daddy.